Welcome back. It's Talkline on Metro News all across the great state of West Virginia. Hoppy Kercheval with you. Phone number 1-800-765-8255. Please welcome to the program Ed Fox, Assistant Administrator for USAID. USAID is an independent federal government agency that works with the Secretary of State's office. They provide economic growth, agriculture, and trade with countries around the world. They also deal in humanitarian assistance, which, of course, is key to what's happening in the Indian Ocean region. Mr. Fox, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Glad to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. Let me throw you, first of all, a complete out-of-the-blue curveball, because you all do have a relationship with the State Department, so I have to ask you this. Drudge is reporting today that al-Zarqawi has been captured in Iraq. That's not your bailiwick, but because you have a relationship with State Department, I thought maybe your office would have heard something. Has anybody heard anything there about that? And if not, I'll move on. That's fine.
Well, that's a terrific rumor, and I hope it's a terrific fact, but I can't confirm it at this point. We work very closely with the State Department, but I must tell you the overwhelming focus at the moment for our agency 24/7 has been the disaster, and I just haven't heard that story. I hope it's true.
All right, very good. Let's talk about USAID and what is getting to these countries, how much, what kind of assistance?
Well, it's somewhat of a complicated thing, but it is overwhelming in terms of the disaster, historical in proportion, but the outpouring of support, not just from governments, that's to be expected in some places, but the outpouring of support from individual Americans and other citizens around the world is also equally as impressive. So a lot is happening. This is really a several-phase kind of a problem. The first phase is to get to those people who have been injured or killed by the actual event and try and deal with that and the families. The second thing, where we are now, is to try to prevent future loss of life. A lot of people don't understand that it's really possible more people could die in the aftermath of one of these events than the actual wave or the earthquake, and that's because the sanitation conditions and the lack of drinking water are ripe for disease, and if a cholera epidemic spreads, then thousands of people can die. So we're really focused on the kind of supplies to deal with that: water purification, rolls of plastic sheeting for shelter, medical supplies, cleaning out drains, draining standing water, those kinds of things.
It sounds as though, according to the media reports, that there's really a bell curve of assistance. That is, some places supplies are backing up, and other places they haven't gotten supplies yet. I guess there are. Is that so? And first of all, and second of all, I guess there's a variety of reasons for that.
Yeah, it is so. And one of the things is the interesting nature of this problem. Normally, if you have an earthquake or a flood or a tornado or something, it's a geographical area that you can go to, and often it's inside the borders of an individual country. In this case, it stretches over 5,000 miles and deals with a dozen different governments. Each government is in charge of its own relief operation, so in essence, we're running about 12 relief operations at once. Every country has different geography, sometimes even and cultural language, even religious barriers that we have to take into account. Clearly, this is one of the big challenges, that some of these places are so remote that we actually haven't been to all of them in Indonesia. So getting supplies out there is a problem. There was an example just today you may have heard about, where in Sumatra, in the Aceh region, which was one of the most severe hit, one of the relief planes hit a cow on a runway.
I did hear that.
Yeah, and so that shows you the kind of environment. Obviously, they don't have any equipment to take care of a big plane like that, and the fact that they've got cows and chickens running across the runway gives you an idea of the sophistication of the airport.
Also, I read today where there are problems in places like Sri Lanka, where in Sri Lanka, they have for years, there's been a battle between the existing government and the Tamil, I think that's how you say it, Tamil rebels.
Tamil
rebels. And so now there's an issue, okay, who's going to deliver the supplies, even though there's some level of cooperation? The Tamil rebels don't want the existing government to be seen as helping the people. And so all these things start to come into play.
Yes, this is part of the complicated nature. It's not only in Sri Lanka, and you're absolutely correct. The Tamils have control over the northern, eastern part of the country,
right,
and they have roadblocks which aren't always manned and making it difficult to move supplies in and out. But there's a similar situation in Indonesia, on the island of Sumatra and the Aceh region that I just mentioned. There's a Free Aceh separatist movement there, and up until this earthquake, the government of Indonesia has not allowed many outsiders into the region. that was really a slowing down of the ability to find out how many people had been hurt and suffered. But overall, I must say that there are some good things with this, because at least we have a ceasefire. There's no fighting going on. There is some political maneuvering for credit, but so far we've been able to maneuver around it. It hasn't really impeded the effort. It has made it a little bit more difficult, but that is a challenge.
Ed Fox is with us, Assistant Administrator for USAID, which is working on these relief efforts over in the Indian Ocean. What are we... I'm starting to see some conflicting statements about what people should do. President Bush, of course, yesterday appointed his father and also former President Clinton to head up the solicitation for donations in this country. Meanwhile, Secretary of State Colin Powell said, well, there's plenty of money right now, about $2 billion in the pipeline. Doctors Without Borders says, well, they're okay right now. They've got sufficient funds. Other organizations say, no, we need funds. So who are we to believe?
Well, I think it's a little bit of oranges and apples.
Okay.
I think that, as I indicated, this thing is in phases. The first phase is to deal with the immediate aftermath. The second phase is to prevent any further deaths. The third phase is rehabilitation. That's where we go in and rebuild the water lines and the sewage lines so that we can permanently sort of fix that. Then the fourth thing would be reconstruction. And those, each one of those steps actually takes a little bit longer in time. So we have enough money. We have enough things on the ground right now to deal with the immediate emergency. There's an absorptive capacity to this immediate response, both in terms of people and goods and supplies. The real need for money will be to support the longer-term reconstruction and development, which is generally takes months to years and is in the billions of dollars. So Secretary Powell was talking about the federal government's contribution when he said $350 million was enough. That's what the president pledged. But clearly, the President Bush is reaching out and urging Americans to do what we do better than any other people in the world, and that is decide on our own what we want to do with our money and give it to the charities of our choice, faith-based organizations, non-governmental organizations. And that kind of assistance is still needed and will be for quite some time.
So that would be your advice to Americans, people across West Virginia trying to decide what to do, is go with one of the traditional organizations that is familiar, that is established, that is institutional?
Absolutely. We have some, if you go to our website, www.usaid.gov, we have some suggestions there on how to give and what to do, and we even list some of the organizations. We work with over 2,500 NGOs around the world. So we have a long history of this. We don't endorse individuals, but we do have some listed that are reputable organizations. The big thing is a lot of times in disasters, and it's certainly the case in the United States, people want to go to their pantries and pull out food and clothing and that sort of thing. And while that's a good gesture, it really isn't the best appropriate thing when you're dealing with something 6,000 miles away. The best thing to do is give cash. We can move that instantaneously. We put it in the hands of the people on the ground who know exactly what they need to buy with it. And the third thing is that it actually helps the local economy get back moving a little bit, so you roll the dollars over and get much more use out of them.
Is there, and you all have a pretty broad mission because you work with economic growth, agriculture, trade, global health, democracy, conflict prevention, humanitarian assistance, all across the world. Is there, once people's needs are met, is there any, I don't want to make something here that isn't, but is there a broader issue here about, not about whether we can prevent tsunamis, but about things like poverty or population control or where people live? I don't know. I'm searching here. Is there anything, is there a broader issue?
Let me first state that you're absolutely right. Our mandate is pretty broad. We are the government's, the federal government's lead agency for humanitarian disaster assistance and development assistance. We have missions in 80 different countries around the world where U.S. citizens are on the ground conducting on a day-in and day-out basis programs in the areas that you mentioned, education, health, development, governance, so on and so forth. That's an ongoing process, and it has been for 40-plus years, ever since the Marshall Plan, when the United States decided its position in the world called for us to reach out. Become more important today for a number of reasons. President Bush, for instance, has decided that development is actually part of our national security strategy. We're no longer threatened by developed countries as we were in the past world wars. The threats now come from the failed states where terrorist organizations move in.
Right.
Al-Qaeda, for instance, had its headquarters in Somalia, Sudan, and Afghanistan. All good examples of why we can ignore this for a while to our own peril. It's actually in the best interest of the United States to reach out in areas for friends. It's not giving things away. We're doing it in our own self-interest.
All right. Ed Fox, who is Assistant Administrator for USAID. And that website, again, is www.usaid.gov. Is that right?
That's correct. And I might also add that I went to school in Lewisburg, West Virginia. So
did you?
So I got to be where I am today.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Were you at the military school there?
Greenbrier, yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah. Well, great. Well, listen, it's good to talk to you. And I hope that the mission goes well. And, you know, West Virginians, we've gotten a ton of calls. People want to know what they can do. So.
Well, the American people are the most generous in the world by far. They've been giving both through the federal government, but our traditions are private. And that's something that Europe and others don't have. They depend on their government to tax them and decide what to do with the money. Here we have some things for the federal government to do. Our armed forces are just terrific. We see what they're doing. By the way, AID is doing the reconstruction in Afghanistan and Iraq. In fact, yesterday I'm sad to report that one of our people working for us over there was killed. So we're involved in all of
I understand.
These things. But it's on behalf of the American people, and they can all feel proud that good things are being done in their name.
I got to break. Ed Fox with USAID. Thank you for your time.
Pleasure. Nice to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Good to make a West Virginia connection.